Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Slisher. You're listening to Contact Talk Radio. This is a radio show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure. And we're going to have quite an adventure today. My guest is none other than Stephen Forrest, who's a wonderful astrologer, widely regarded as an authority in the field. And we'll be talking about evolutionary astrology. Now, evolutionary astrology is a branch of astrology that sort of talks about how we evolve. Now, you know, as human beings, we're all in an evolutionary process. And I want to just sort of tie this in with a sort of a brief little vignette about the concepts of good and evil. Now, you know, throughout the world, all the major religions have concepts of good and evil, and, you know, the Catholic Church has one version, and the Muslims have a different version. Everybody has a definition of good and evil, but universally, mankind has a definition of good and evil, which I think is very appropriate. Anything that expands and moves society or humanity forward, and that is considered to be universally good. Anything that does the opposite of that, which sets us back in some concept, is considered to be universally bad. So using that as sort of our construct, I want to welcome Stephen Forrest to the show, and we're going to talk about how astrology can help us evolve to our greatest higher good. Stephen, welcome to Turning of the Wheel.
Well, I'm very glad to be here, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. I've been trying to get you for quite some time. With regard to evolutionary astrology, why don't you give us your summation of it, if you could, and so we have a better idea about it, and so the idea of, you know, how we evolve and move forward in our lives will sort of best serve us all.
Oh, great. Thanks. That's a good question. Good way to start. My basic definition of evolutionary astrology is that it is the synthesis of ancient metaphysics and modern psychological astrology.
Mm-hmm.
What we are doing with it essentially is you start off the way a psychologist might think. You know, you go to sit with a shrink, and the shrink is going to try to figure out what happened to you in your childhood, what your family experience was like. And, you know, most of it you don't even remember. And what you do kind of create with the shrink is sort of a, I don't want to call it a fantasy, but it's your best guess about what was actually going on in terms of your parents and so on. I don't mean to sound like I'm putting down psychology, but I'm underscoring the idea that our actual knowledge of our childhood is pretty vague. Now, we find that that childhood stuff is quite relevant to our present life. If we get the history right, it gives us insight into the present. Now, evolutionary astrology works exactly the same way, except instead of being interested in our childhood, we're interested in prior lives, reincarnation, all the things that hurt us and wounded us and were left unfinished or unresolved in past lives.
Now, when you talk about that, there's got to be a specific point in the chart or specific points in the chart that you look at that sort of reveal that information. What are those points?
Well, it's in practical terms, we sort of enter it through the south node of the moon, but the point that I really want to make here is that everything in the chart is karmic. At least that's how we see it from the evolutionary point of view. And if you stop and think about it, it's kind of interesting. It's like once you discover that astrology works, you know, and anybody pays attention to it for a little while is going to quickly learn that. Once we have that, then there are two ways of making philosophical sense of the idea that astrology actually functions. One is that the universe is completely random, and the roulette wheel stops, and because of, at the instant of your birth, and because of some weird physical laws we don't fully understand astrology, right? That makes sense. I don't believe it, but it is logically coherent. The second view is that you have your birth chart for a reason, that it's a meaningful, purposeful universe that we live in. Now, as soon as we accept that second premise, immediately we recognize that anything that caused you to have your present birth chart had to happen before your birth. There's no way around that. Causes, you know, precede effect. And so the next step, this is no proof of reincarnation, but it fits with reincarnation, that we would make the assumption that everything in the birth chart is like it's like the footprints of the abominable snowman, you know, walking through the snow. We try to figure out what the snowman looks like from those footprints, you know, based on the present configuration.
I see. Now, when you're looking at the this sort of karmic path, what these points point out to people, what these points bring out to people, is their strengths and their weaknesses and their ability to sort of interrelate their place in life from their past life as to where they should be going in their future life and where their sort of their karmic path will lead to going forward. And you detect, now the south node of the moon is exactly the opposite of the north node of the moon, and the south node has typically been the spot we'd look at for where we've come from, and the north node corresponds to where we're going. Is that correct?
Yeah. that really is.
And so the idea of trying to find this out, I have always found with my clients is that if people are finding themselves in sort of like a, one of those spinning wheels where they're getting nowhere, it's sort of as if they're not really playing their cards right. They're not sort of doing their real life's purpose. They're sort of banging into walls. The doors are not opening for them. They're not really following their true soul's purpose. What an astrology reading can do, a professional astrology reading can do, is to provide that information where your north node is, where you really should be putting your energy. And I have found that with my clients that when they have understood that and they fully grasp where they're supposed to be going, the doors begin to open. Have you had that experience as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the ways I like to say it with my clients is that this is sort of a fierce image, but if you're an old person, you've come to the end of your life, you're lying on your deathbed, and you have a good feeling about the whole thing. Like you have the sense that you lived the life that you were supposed to live. You know, it doesn't get any better than that. That's the greatest victory available to a human being. Get to the end of the trail with that kind of good heart. Now, how do you do that? And essentially, what your birth chart is an answer to that question. It's a blueprint for the life that, if you live it, it's the right life for you, and it gets you to the end with the feeling that you did it, you got it right. And the epicenter of that is the north node of the moon.
What's interesting is that I think that, you know, of course, with every chart, there's always an element of free will involved. And free will is where many people probably fall down because they may not know. They may make a decision that's wrong against what the chart might recommend, and then they find themselves in this sort of downward spiral or banging into walls and stuff like that. It seems that so many people do go wrong in their lives. So I sort of hear this all the time from people, maybe not people who are looking for astrology readings, but other people I speak with who say, what am I doing wrong with my life? Why am I not getting the things I want? Why am I not succeeding? Why are my relationships falling apart? Yeah. And it seems as if they're just they're sort of barking up the wrong tree. So
yeah. I'd like to respond to that with what'll seem like a cliche at first. The birth chart is the soul's lesson plan. You know, that's one of those instant cliches, in one ear and out the other. But if we stop and think about it, if the birth chart has something to do with what our soul is learning in this lifetime, well, we never need lessons in areas where we're already educated, smart, competent, and wise. You know? So the birth chart, a rather fierce translation of this idea that it's the lesson plan, is that the birth chart represents everything wrong with you and how to fix it. You know,
it's
ultimately not a negative statement.
Mm-hmm.
But we are on evolutionary journeys. A little while ago, you mentioned, you know, just speaking quickly, that the birth chart will describe strengths and weaknesses in the character, and that's certainly true, but I'd like to make that a little more granular. And I suspect everyone out there in iPod land listening to us now can corroborate the following statement. They have had weaknesses in their lives in the past, which they have worked on, and now they're stronger, now they're better. I think anyone with brains enough to be interested in this material can identify with that, so that there are no permanent weaknesses built into anyone's birth chart. We can work on those things. Every symbol in the chart, even one that might be viewed as bad by a conventional astrologer, you know, Pluto square the moon or something like that, all those things can be gotten right. And the lessons of the soul, which are built into the birth chart, tell us how to get it right, and what it looks like when it's right, and where to put your foot next on the road of getting it right.
Yeah, absolutely. That resonates with me very clearly. You know, I've often said that when I look at a chart and I see lots of squares and oppositions, I always say, this is a wonderfully rich chart. This is where your potential lies. This is where the gold lies and the vein of gold lies in your birth chart. It's not the soft aspects, the trines or the conjunctions. It's always the hard aspects that bring people to realize where they need to work. And when you do actually work on those things under the advisement of someone such as Stephen or myself, you find that you really begin to flower and these things, and the doors begin to open up radically. Now, my guest today is Stephen Forrest. His website is www.stephenforrest.com. It's two R's in his last name, and Stephen with a V. If you go there, you can arrange to have a consultation with Stephen. And what we, as astrologers, request from you is that you provide birth date, birth place, and birth time. The time is very relevant. Typically, that can be found on your birth certificate, or your mother will probably know. And when we have that information, we can compose a very detailed chart of your, you know, sort of like what I always call, referred to as an owner's manual for you. It's sort of like how to drive you, how to, you know, operate you. When you buy a new lawnmower, you get an owner's manual. When they follow these paths that we have been able to, you know, shed light on in the chart, they really do begin to flower and make great strides forward. But, you know, this is where free will becomes involved. You know, we do have choices. Oftentimes we are faced at a fork in the road, where our astrology chart may say go one way, or we may be advised to go one way, and we choose the other way because at the time it seemed more valid, only to be fraught with disappointment or not having the right outcome that we chose. And it seems interesting to me that, you know, the degree of information is so rich in the chart that people really have to take the time to sort of discover it. And this has sort of been my goal of the show, is to try to get people to understand how valid and this information is when it's really applied correctly. Now, Stephen, do you think that we ever completely evolve? I mean, you know, when you look at the chart and you say, well, I'm going around this time and this is what I've got to learn this trip, do you think that we ever really get to the spot where we've got it all together, metaphorically speaking?
You're probably asking the wrong person. Maybe you should ask the Dalai Lama that one. You know, I look at the Dalai Lama, you know, for one example, and I do sense that you know, here is a being who is so far beyond me. You know, he invokes humility in me as I simply look into that man's eyes, and at least then I get the sense of a kind of goal towards which we're all heading. Now, the Dalai Lama himself doesn't really claim to be enlightened, but I think he's closer to it than I am. And so, yes, is the simple answer. I do think that ultimately we all achieve a state of enlightenment or oneness with the universe, but I wouldn't hold our breath. You know, the most important question in life is, where do I put my foot next? And astrology is very good at answering that.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, I had a guest on a while ago, and we were talking about the concept of time. And we were talking about the concept of time as a unit of measure based on mileage rather than on the passing of time. In other words, the Earth spins, you know, 18.75 miles per second. And each second that evolves in the course of time includes all of history that came before that. So every second that passes has all of history embedded in that single second. And the next second to precede that, the forthcoming second, we have the ability to determine what we do with that second. And I think that the astrology chart, and when it's done professionally, gives the opportunity to the individual to determine how to live that next second or minute or hour or year.
Absolutely. I love the sound of that. The great albatross around the neck of astrology makes it so hard to promote it to the general public. It has always carried this patina of fatalism, and that's such a depressing cosmology. You know, the future is already there, and no matter what you do, it's going to happen to you, and we can see it in the chart. And I think that's completely bogus. But it's an idea that has had its adherence, and it's, well, as I say, just the albatross that hangs around the neck of all astrologers.
Yeah, and there also seems to be a sense of a grander purpose attached to all aspects and all readings within the chart. You know, sometimes I think it's just the language, the vernacular of the language. People, you know, sort of say, well, you've got Mars in your second house, you're bound to be famous, you know, you've got, you're a strong Virgo, you're going to be as wealthy as Bill Gates. And, you know, there's sort of this misconception that we attribute to famous people, I think, and the desire to be famous or wealthy or well-received, when all it might really mean is that you may have all those characteristics and you're just a damn good businessman and you're able to pay your bills on time, or you're just, you know, a really nice person in the neighborhood. It doesn't mean that you're going to go on to become famous. I think that the people oftentimes inflate their own value sometimes or are misled. Don't you think that's true with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And pandering to people's, you know, neurotic ego needs is a great way to make money, if not to evolve your soul in terms of astrology or any other form of counseling. Mm-hmm. Fame is such a trivial issue from the ultimate perspective that you can't even really see it in a birth chart. It's interesting that you study the charts of famous people, and they don't really have distinguishing characteristics compared to the rest of us. Some people will say, some astrologers will say, well, the 10th house, you know, the house of career, that's really full and have lucky planets there, you know, you'll be famous. But, you know, you just go through a database of people who are famous, and more than half of them certainly will have nothing in the 10th house.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't see it.
They do have characteristics that do point to a certain propensity for abilities or something that allows them to shine. There definitely are hard aspects in there that sort of push them. And I always refer to hard aspects as stress points. And I don't like, I mean, stress points is, people often misconfuse that word with the idea of being stressed. And it's not. Stress is actually a good thing to have in your life, because it is sort of it's a motivating factor that it gets you to move. It's sort of like if the train is scheduled to leave at 6:15, and you're dashing to get there, and you're stressed to get to that train. Well, that may be true. You may be stressed to get there, but if the train didn't leave at 6:15, you wouldn't be able to get there. There wouldn't be any structure around that in order to allow that predictability. So the stress points, just like April 15th for taxes as well, we need to have these stress points in our life in order to allow us to be motivated and to move forward and to have, you know, the ability to make progress in our charts. And I think it's very valid that people see it that way and not be stressed about it, but to see them as these stress points as positive aspects that really help motivate them.
Absolutely. And I'd like to cast an agreeing light on that, but from a slightly different perspective. When I think of the hard aspects, the so-called bad aspects in charts, oppositions and squares, you know, these are parts of you that are arguing with other parts of you. You know, there's an argument or a tension in your head. When I'm looking at the harmonious aspects, it's the opposite. These are elements that agree with each other. Now, here's the next step. Let's imagine that you are in constructive argument with another human being, like you're in a relationship and you're trying to work something out. Would you prefer that other person to be somebody who always agrees with herself and never sees anything from another angle? That's the trines and the sextiles, the so-called good aspects. Or would you prefer that person to be one who can entertain paradoxical and multidimensional perspectives because she is having an argument with herself, so she can entertain simultaneously contradictory possibilities? The question is really rather rhetorical. It's pretty easy that we recognize it to be a virtue that a person is capable of alternate points of view, complexity, a sense of paradox and irony. These are the benefits that arise in consciousness from this.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that point, because I do believe that. I mean, I think the idea of a conversation is really valid, because it's through that interchange of communication and sort of people bouncing ideas and saying, you know, this is my view, this is your view. It's through that dialogue that we sort of come to a spot of moving things forward. And being challenged that way allows you to think things differently. And that's a perfect example. I actually, when I was very young, one of my girlfriends, I remember thinking back to her and said, gosh, you know, we never fought. And it was kind of like, even though that was fine at the time, because I was 18 or 20 years old, and who wants to fight when you're 18 or 20, but ultimately it sort of drove the relationship apart, because there wasn't a sense of growth or spark or potential in that. And I think that comes from that dialogue that you're talking about. And that's really a wonderful point. It's like a pinch point that allows people to sort of evolve.
I can echo your experience, you know, quite personally. My first marriage was one very much like that. Nothing but harmony between us. We've sort of switched a little into talking about synastry, not the aspects within a chart, but the aspects between two charts. The logic is exactly the same. You know, in my own first marriage, we got along just fine, nothing but easy aspects, but we should have had fights. I think we could have saved the relationship if we had simply put the conflict on the table.
Because the conflict allows you to air things. It sets up a context for airing your real views, and as long as you can do it in a constructive manner, that's the only way to do it. You know, one of the great things about Gandhi, when he was talking about, he has written many books about conflict resolution, and he always said that the only way conflicts are ever resolved is if both people, both parties, or whoever the the opposing forces are, give up something in order to come to some sort of a middle ground. If one person gives up more than the other, there's going to be resentment on the other side, and the same is true for the other. You've got to both give up something. And I think that when you are in a conflict such as the one we're talking about, these kinds of ideas are evident, and this is what sort of gives you this ability to evolve and come to a compromise. But without that interchange, nothing happens, and it becomes complacent. It becomes, you know, you become apathetic and sort of, you know, complacent, and there really is no ability to grow. And then this sort of just fizzles away. It's kind of boring.
Mm-hmm. You're speaking of Gandhi. It brings a quote of Gandhi's to my mind. I've memorized this because I've just used it all the time with counseling situations. Gandhi said, "The ally we must cultivate is the part of our enemy which knows the truth."
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is great. And that is really what it does come down to. I mean, I think that's a very astute way of saying it, because it really does come down to that, because we are seeing in that other person's view things about us that probably do, you know, niggle us a little bit, you know, sort of bother us a little bit. And it's in that part of it that really is becoming, you know, sort of revealing of our own inner drives. You know, when you look at the charts and you see... you see people with hard aspects, and you're looking at them, and you're saying, you know, you've got this Mars square Venus, and or whatever, and you, especially with this, is very true with synastry. Now, synastry, for those of you who don't know, is the art of taking two charts and putting them together to sort of see how the planets stack up against, you know, if your moon is conjunct to the other person's rising sign, or if, you know, or how Mars and Venus interact, and they stack up against each other. It's different from a composite chart, but in a synastry chart allows an astrologer such as Stephen or myself to sort of sit down and say, okay, here's where your strengths and weaknesses are. And in that, you can see great tension sometimes. What are the things that you look for when you look at a chart such as that between two people? And are you often surprised by some of the aspects and how they manifest themselves? I often have a lot of these aha moments where I see things just begin to, you know, sort of erupt out of the chart because they are just so evident as to why there was a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like riding in a white water sometimes. Once you get rolling with it, the symbols just begin to work synergistically with each other, and your unconscious mind, your soul really gets engaged with it, and it's fun, and it's a wild ride. You can always tell a really competent, effective astrologer, because when they get talking about this stuff, you see them get excited, you realize they're actually having fun.
Yeah, it is fun, I agree.
Yeah, it really, truly is. And you know, that as soon as I say that, you laugh. People do. It seems like kind of a lightweight remark, but I think it's really important.
It's almost like uncovering a treasure, I think. You know, opening up a treasure chest, because when you begin to see this stuff pop out of you, and when I look at a chart, I'm sure it's just the same for you, this stuff just jumps out at me. You say, oh my gosh, here it is. It's right here. Of course, this is where the issue came from.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get rolling. But that sense of rolling, it comes from the sense of the unconscious mind being engaged. And that always, there's tremendous energy locked in the unconscious. And once we lock in with it, that energy enters our conscious mind, and it manifests as fun. It manifests as excitement. The contrasting image, and you'll see no shortage of this at astrology conferences, the very intellectual, cognitive astrologer who's trying to do it in a purely mental way, like you would balance your checkbook or figure out your taxes, and they're not having fun, and their brow is wrinkled, and they're trying to remember the tertiary progression of the vertex to the midpoint of
the... Yeah, that gets... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I just feel so sorry for them.
Take a breath and dive in.
Yeah,
that's what I think. I don't try to get... I personally don't get involved into that much. I basically look at the chart and sort of go with it on a very organic level, and I sort of let it talk to me, and the stuff just begins to come out.
Yeah.
And I think that probably just comes from time. Stephen is available for anybody who, by the way, anybody who wants to have an astrology reading, you can go to www.stephenforrest.com. That's Stephen with a V and Forrest with two R's, and he will be happy to set up a time to speak with you. I can't emphasize enough the granularity and the wealth of information you will get from a professional astrology reading. I think if anybody's going through a time, and this is especially evident now when many people have lost their jobs and relationships are shifting, and you know, the sort of their daily fabric of their life is a little bit less stable than it used to be. This is a wonderful opportunity to find some light in the clouds, you know, sort of a blue sky in the clouds there, because of the fact that it will give you some ideas as to where you can next go. And this seems to be extremely evident. I also do charts as well. My website is www.chrisflisher.com. which you can get to from the Contact Talk website or from my own site. We both do the same sort of thing. But what we'll need is the birth date, the birthplace, and the birth time. And from that, you'll get an amazingly rich thing. And I tell you, I know that when I had my first astrology reading done, you know, decades ago, it sort of was so profound an experience for me that it really dictated and shaped the course of my life from that point forward, so much of the fact that I spent so much of my time pouring into astrology. That's how revealing it really is. I mean, it's the sort of thing that your breath gets taken away, for those of you who've never had one done. You know, we're not talking about newspaper astrology. It's way too broad. We're talking about real, hard, fast imprint. It's like your fingerprints. It's like your eyeball prints. The astrology chart, when it's based on those three points, the birth date, the place, and the time, is remarkably accurate. And I really can't emphasize that enough. I mean, that's sort of our mantra, don't you think, Stephen, as far as what we want to bring to the world?
Oh, definitely. I'd like to throw in one very practical point. You're wisely emphasizing that how critical it is that we know a person's time. Of course, everybody knows their place and date, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Time is a little fuzzy sometimes. And
the
practical point here is something my wife and I have done on our website, StephenForrest.com, is we've assembled a list of all the places that people can contact in the states where they were born to get their birth certificates and their birth times. Many times the birth certificate that's been issued to the parents is not as complete as the state's actual record. And a really critical point here to underline is people, when they don't know their time, they'll often try to contact the hospital where they were born. That often doesn't work. In each state, there's a Department of Vital Statistics or something of that nature. And again, my website will list them state by state. We have some international stuff, too. It's helped a lot of people find their time.
That's a very good, that's a great point, because, you know, the statistics, the granularity there, I mean, you know, it's the ascendant shifts every 4 minutes, and, you know, the degree of the ascendant, you know, you've got a 2-hour window for each of the signs, basically, on that thing, which is one thing. You know, you can say that you're Virgo rising or whatever, but knowing the degree to which you are a Virgo rising is much more profound because of how it interacts with the other planets in your chart, and you'll get much more of a granular reading there. We've got about 2 minutes to go before we take a quick break, but I just want to wrap up a few things. We're going to be back in a few minutes after a 2.5-minute break for a commercial. And my guest today is Stephen Forrest. Stephen, what's your new book that you've just written? Can you talk about that for a few minutes?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. It's called Yesterday's Sky, and the subtitle is Astrology and Reincarnation. It's essentially a companion volume to my first book that came out 25 years ago, The Inner Sky, and it covers more of the metaphysical realities of behind the chart, how to actually determine the nature of your prior lives from the present birth chart.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. I want to get into that in greater detail. Again, my guest today is Stephen Forrest. His website is www.stephenforrest. That's Stephen with a V and Forrest with two R's. And he is an amazing astrologer. And we're going to come back after a quick break, and we're going to talk about his book, Yesterday's Sky. So stay with us, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
What is your destiny? Where are you going? What is your real purpose? Do you know? Do you want to know? Of course you do. It's your duty to yourself. We are all here for a reason, and we all have great potential. Discover all of this and more with a professional astrology reading. My name is Chris Flisher, and I can help you. Discover your strengths and work on your weaknesses, and live your life to its fullest capacity. Based on your birthday, birthplace, and birth time, an authentic astrology reading will allow you to live your life to the fullest and reveal your true purpose. Only real astrology can give you real information. It is your destiny, and it is your path. Write me at chris@chrisflisher.com and book a reading today. Or call me, 978-264-0668. That's 978-264-0668. www.chrisflisher.com.
Listening live right now, visit our chat room at contacttalkradio.com and join in on the online chat.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Flisher. My guest today is Stephen Forrest. That's Stephen with a V and Forrest with two R's. He's a wonderful astrologer, and he's been on the Out in the East movie. He was an astrologer before astrology was cool. How's that? And that's a good way of looking at it, I guess. He's been around for ages talking about astrology and educating people, and been a wonderful source of inspiration for me as an astrologer. I've reviewed his books many times over the course of my studies and always thought of him as a great mentor and a great teacher. So it's great to have him on here in this format. He has just completed writing a book called Yesterday Sky, which is about reincarnation. I'd like to ask you some questions about it, Steve, if we could. The idea, when you talk about Yesterday Sky, that's sort of indicative of a sky at the time that you were born. Is that sort of what it implies? Is that sort of like where the sky was when you were born? Is that sort of the idea there?
It's more in the pagan sense of, you know, born okay. again and again and again. So in this case, the yesterday would actually be a reference to a time before this incarnation, that you had a previous birth chart. That's the implication.
Mm-hmm. And when you do the reincarnation piece of it, what sort of questions do people want? I mean, what sort of stuff do people really want? They want to know who they were in a past life. And there's always this concept that everybody thinks that they were Queen Elizabeth or that they were Enrico Caruso or somebody like that, when actually they could have just been, a bridge builder in Brooklyn. You know, we don't really, you know, there's a sense of trying to find that person back there that I think must be kind of a difficult task. How do you go about that?
Well, it's like everything else in astrology. We're dealing with symbolism, and symbolism is not literalism. So I really want to make it clear that we can't look at the birth chart and say, you were a pizza waitress in Philadelphia in 1952.
That's right, yeah.
It doesn't work that way. But we can say something along the lines of, for example, that you were in a marriage in which your partner was socially prominent, and so the marriage seemed advantageous to you, but in fact you were so dominated that your own nature was eclipsed, and that was not resolved in that lifetime, and therefore in the present lifetime you have a vulnerability to repeating exactly that same pattern, or possibly being so terrified of repeating that pattern that you won't trust anybody.
Because it wasn't resolved the first time.
Exactly. It's like the comments I made when we first began, when you asked me to define evolutionary astrology, this is exactly analogous to what a psychologist would do about our childhood, except here we are talking about the prior lives, in a sense, the childhood of the soul.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff. You know, the idea of sort of, you know, being faced with that challenge again. I imagine I sort of picture some people like sort of on one of those wheels in the gerbil cage where you're sort of, you know, spinning around and getting nowhere fast. And the treadmill, and it sort of does elicit that kind of idea because of the simple fact that you're sort of spinning your wheels and you're not getting anywhere because you keep repeating the same mistake over and over again. It's kind of like that movie Groundhog Day, I guess, where
yeah.
you know, you keep repeating the same mistake until eventually you get it right. Do you think that do you see that quite frequently in your clients, the people who seem to sort of be repeating the mistakes? In other words, you can see in their past life where they made the mistakes, and you see them making the same mistakes today?
Yeah, to say I see it frequently would be an understatement. I can say this pretty strongly. I have never seen a chart or, you know, the karmic analysis of a chart that was not directly relevant and obvious in the present life of the person, the actual circumstances.
Wow.
Reproduce the karmic stuff. The fingerprint is always there. That's why I'm so excited about this style of astrology. It's like the missing piece that has just been absent in conventional psychological forms of astrology. We'll find that, you know, most of the time, conventional psychological astrology works pretty well. but every now and then you find it just, you know, landing on its behind. And when you bring in the evolutionary perspective, you can always see it. And I wrote an article for the Mountain Astrologer a few years ago in which I used the chart of Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who allegedly at least was involved with the assassination of President Kennedy. A lot of controversy about that, the reality of that, of course. But you look at his chart, and it seems like the most gentle chart. He's a, like, you know, 4th house Libra, 7th house Moon, Cancer rising. But you look at the south node of the Moon, and it's in Aries in the 11th house, and conjunct Saturn. It looks very military. Aries the warrior, 11th house groups, a group of warriors. There's an army. And you get all the symbolism of death and horror that emerges through the karmic analysis of this chart, but would not emerge through a conventional analysis. It doesn't always work like that, but sometimes you'll find that without the evolutionary paradigm, astrology fails, and with it, it's like it corrects your vision for 2020.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Lee Harvey Oswald. Do you, and I wonder how, this is just sort of an arbitrary question, so just bear with me. Do you think that that astrologers, is this possible that we could back ourselves into a chart sometimes?
What do you mean by that?
By that, I'm saying, you know, if we sort of know who the character is. We know Lee Harvey Oswald and who he was and what he did. Had we looked at that chart prior to him creating that, you know, creating that crime, would we have seen the same propensity, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. A very good comment. You know, everybody is a Monday morning quarterback, you know, and
right.
That's true in all fields, and astrology maybe especially. I've gotten a case in point. You know, people will often bring out Adolf Hitler's chart, which doesn't really look so bad. Again, it's a chart that seems very kind of interpersonally sensitive and so on. But they'll say, oh, this is Hitler's chart, and they play Monday morning quarterback. I could have told you that, you know, because he has, you know, Saturn in the 10th house or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we, you know, and I make a point of this in yesterday's sky, many of the more problematic elements in Hitler's chart are repeated in the chart of Charlie Chaplin.
Yes,
you know,
the
comedian. And then,
mm-hmm.
So, like, give us a break. You know, no one in honesty, in my opinion, could look at Hitler's chart through any conventional kind of astrological means and even approximate the reality of what that man was.
Yeah, that's remarkable. But, you know, you think about it, there is the ability in both of those for some sense of notoriety. So they did possess the ability to be well-known. So it's more that commonality, I think, that they were well-known. How they fell on the line of being well-known, one went one way, one went the other, and they even had this characteristic about them when they looked the same.
Yes.
You know, and of course, Charlie Chaplin seemed to mock, you know, Hitler in some ways just because of that, the mustache, but they certainly had the propensity there for this sense of fame.
Yeah. And yet, again, we apply logic. I agree with what you're saying, but just logic and reason. There were many, many humans who were born that day at around that time. And, you know, correcting for latitude and longitude, you can get basically the same chart in Africa or whatever. And so literally hundreds or thousands of people who were born under that essential broad signature. And, you know, Charlie Chaplin and Hitler each became famous. And yet, many of the others obviously did not. Most of the others did not. But it goes back to what I was saying a little while ago about how fame isn't something you can reliably see. We would find that the others, the anonymous ones, so to speak, were probably influential within their communities. When I think of the symbolism of fame in a chart, basically the 10th house, with a client, I'll always say, this is the house that begins where your personal relationships end.
Yeah,
how far it extends from that, we can't say. Somebody is the mayor of a little town in Iowa, and half the people in that town can't even name their own mayor, but that person is making a difference in that town.
Yes. So I think that's a very valid point. It's a question of degree, and then the degree to which that sense of fame, in this case, is is illustrated, is based on free will. It's based on the outside, influences of the birth, of the environment in which they were raised. Any number of other things augment that reading because of, Hitler may have been raised. I don't know much about Hitler's past life, but his upbringing may have been considerably different than Charlie Chaplin's, even though they had the same ability to be famous. Obviously, their outcomes are dramatically different.
Oh, yeah. And his karma is different. Here we enter the realm of mystery, and even with evolutionary astrology, there are pretty severe limits to how precisely we can see the karma. Hitler, obviously a monster, and Charlie Chaplin, probably a rather complicated man.
Not I don't think you could be someone like that and not be complicated.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I mean, both of them are very intelligent men, very intelligent, very charismatic men, had a strong sense of personality, a strong sense of self-worth, and they may have been compensating for something by that. They may have been very shy younger. Oftentimes people who become great people later in life were essentially very shy, and they sort of learned their lesson and evolved beyond that. So any number of characteristics there point to that sort of commonality that they both had.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in order for Hitler to get up there and speak the way he spoke and to rouse a country the way he did, is not far off the mark when you think about it in terms of influence, the way Charlie Chaplin was as being one of the first, silent film figures to, and that wonderful pictures of him blasted around the world, equally as powerful of a character, just a different road. You know, the idea I have often said, and I hope this doesn't get taken wrong by people, is the idea of opposites, a similar sort of characteristic in people, but taken in opposite extremes. In other words, is the idea of the criminal and the law enforcement officer, are they that far apart in their motive? Because their motive is all about sort of like about control and this is not to put anything, this is not to cast dispersions on anybody who's a law enforcement officer or a criminal for that matter. I'm trying to be very objective here. I'm only talking about this in sort of an intellectual realm, so please don't anybody get upset about this. But what I'm trying to point to is that there's a character trait that allows that these people carry with them that puts them into this realm of this sort of this tense of tension and control. You know, the policemen have a certain amount of authority, and a criminal has authority, in their own realm. And they, even though they may very well be extremely different, polarizing even in that regard, because they are opposites, but they have a sense, there's a certain commonality there, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or and they're just reading out of the present headlines, what's the difference between a chief financial officer and a thief?
Right. Yeah, exactly. A much better analogy. Thank you. I like that one. That doesn't sit as badly with me.
Might get you in less trouble because everybody agrees on that one right now.
Yeah.
There's a serious point in what you're saying, and it really just fits astrology like a key in a lock. That the astrological chart will represent a field of archetypal possibilities, like the question of justice and order in society. Can be really up in a chart, and one person responds to it and becomes a police officer, supporting, justice and order. And another person responds to the same archetypal field, but saying those questions would be meaningless unless there were tension placed on justice, tension placed on order. And it's not like people make a simple abstract decision like that, but following your own predilections. But it's the same archetypal field, and what a good astrologer does is in my opinion, is to look at the archetypal fields, plural, that present themselves to an individual, and then to make suggestions about how to relate optimally to this. Ultimately, a person is probably going to be happier lying on their deathbed if they were a police officer than if they were a criminal damaging other people.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. I love that. It's sort of the context, It's the ability to respond. The ability to act within a realm. It's the ability to act within a contextual form, a framework of a modus operandi. Let's say of so what gives people the motive? What gives them the drive? Where is the Mars in their chart? Where does this motivational aspect come from? Interestingly enough, you must Mark Edmund Jones. he had given a dissertation back in the 1920s to an astrological society in New York City, and he gave his instructions on how to read a chart. And he said the very first, and he had 17 steps in what it took to read a chart. And this is very widely published if you go out on the web. Mark Edmund Jones is the same man who's responsible for bringing the Sabian symbols to the world of astrology with Elsie Wheeler. But rather than go on that path, one of the very first thing he said he looked at in the chart was where Mars was, because Mars is where motivation comes from. And so the point I'm trying to make here is that motivation for Hitler and motivation for Charlie Chaplin, I think, were essentially the same, because they both rose to become prominent figures. Where they went awry or where they departed was based on the choices that free will brought to them, or experience or environment or nurture or nature or all those things.
Yeah.
And it's really quite... I mean, Mars is a very strong characteristic in the chart, and it's interesting. I mean, now this was, you know, written years ago, but I'm always fascinated by that, because I do think that. Of course, I'm an Aries, so maybe I'm more inclined to think that way about Mars, because I'm fond of Mars. But it sort of resonates with me, and I often look at Mars in people's charts when I look at them, and it does give you a sense, because his logic was, if you understand the motive, you will understand the person.
Yeah,
you know,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm. And, kind of fascinating. My guest today is Stephen Forrest. His website is www.stephenforrest.com. That's Stephen with a V and a Forrest with two R's. If you're Googling him, you'll find him out there. And his recent book is Yesterday's Sky, which is subtitled, if you could correct me on the subtitle?
Astrology and Reincarnation.
Astrology and Reincarnation. So what the astrology chart will bring to light is what your path has been in the past, and where your path will be in the future. The idea is that they sort of mirror each other. If you know where your past was, you'll know where your future is. And the place that most astrologers look for that, it typically, is the South Node and the North Node, also known as the Dragon's Head and the Dragon's Tail of the astrology chart. Now, Stephen, when you're looking at this sort of when you're looking at this in a chart, and you will look to the South Node, and when you look for the way this begins to become enriched by your interpretation, is the interaction of the other planets with the South Node?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's really what Yesterday's Sky is about. So just to run it down quickly, we look to the position in terms of sign and house of the South Node. We look to any planet that is conjunct the South Node. We look to the planet that rules the South Node. So if your South Node is in Libra, Venus is the ruler of Libra. So where is the Venus in the chart? It will probably be in a different sign in a different house. And that will give us more information. We look to the aspects that other planets make to the South Node of the Moon. So many times we find we're actually using the South Node as an entry into maybe half the chart. So it gets very complex. And therefore, well, to use your word, granular. It gets very specific.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating, though, because the wealth of stuff there. And I think that, in my experience, when I begin to see people's eyes light up and they say, oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, I find that with most, I don't always find that with fixed signs, I will say that much, but I do find it with fixed signs tend to say, no, that's not me. And I say, okay, well, this is why you have a lot of fixity in your chart. It's like you're not listening to what I'm saying. I have a very good friend of mine. I always say, and she'll say, I am not a fixed sign, even though she's got four planets in Scorpio and everything else. And she's like, that's not me. I said, okay, well, the fact that you won't admit that you have this might mean that you're fixed, but round and round we go. But anyway, also you mentioned something about you have a mentorship program on your website as well. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's an apprenticeship program.
Apprenticeship, I'm sorry, yeah.
And it's about 500 people have passed through it. I've been doing it for 10 years or so. It's been really one of the greatest joys and professional successes of my life. I got tired of I go to speak at astrology conferences quite a lot, and they serve a good purpose, sort of a gathering of the clan, but you have, maybe 75 minutes or something like that to present an idea, and that inevitably leads to too much narrowness and not enough integration. You want to really understand the chart, you have to pull a lot of things together, and that takes a while, so I decided to set up an ongoing program. The logistics of it are that each program meets twice a year for 4 days. and then we have internet communication available in between. So it's a four-day intensive twice a year. After 3 years, a person has essentially graduated from the program, although many have chosen to stay on. Presently, I have three such programs. Two of them are out here in California, and one of them that's just been going for a little over a year is in North Sydney, Australia, so I'm going down there.
Interesting. But it's an apprenticeship in the practice of evolutionary astrology.
Absolutely, and I'm really proud of the number of people who have quit their day jobs as a result of it. I'm tremendously proud of my students who have gotten invitations to speak at conferences.
Yeah, and they've been able to take this message further.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, the term evolutionary astrology does imply a sense, to me, that's why I started out the show when I started talking about the idea of expansion and moving beyond and, the idea of expansion versus contraction, good versus evil. I didn't mean to be too high and lofty about that, but I wanted to sort of drive home the idea that, as we evolve, as human beings evolve, and if we are to serve our greater purpose and our greater, role in life, we do need to expand. And I think that expansion can only come from looking at alternatives, delving into different tools that allow us to get to different spots in our lives. There's nothing here about astrology. There's nothing about astrology. The other day, somebody asked me, and I was out on my walk, and somebody stopped me and said, "Is astrology a cult?" And I said, "Absolutely not. It can be work in conjunction with anything at any point in time. You can be a diehard Catholic and still work with astrology. It's more about gathering information. It's more about introspection. It's about how to expand, how to grow, how to achieve your greatest potential. And I think it's important that people understand that. And that's the idea of what I think evolutionary astrology is about in a very sort of granular level, because it does allow people to sort of say, I need to evolve. How can I evolve? What's the best way for me to evolve and go forward?
Yeah. When I sit with a client and I get to the reincarnational material, I'll always say to them that I'm going to use the language of reincarnation if it's okay with you. And yet when I speak of prior lifetimes, we can easily interpret them as the effect of deoxyribonucleic acid in the nucleus of your cells, your ancestors, genetics. Mm-hmm. We could even take essentially a very kind of simple churchy point of view and say, this is how God made the baby.
It's sort of that the collective unconscious. We are always a product of where we came from. We are, like you mentioned, that the nucleic acids is very valid to me, because that's sort of carried through. If a baby were born today, in a very pure sense, a baby born today would know perhaps how to use a mouse on a computer, where a baby born 100 years ago wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, how interesting, yes. And, they say that the learned traits cannot be transmitted genetically. That I'm not sure if that's ultimately going to prove to be the solid truth, but it's certainly very consistent with reincarnation. If you spent, 40 years in a prior life sitting there at your computer, which will be the case in a generation or two, somebody reincarnates and they know how to work them out, just like Mozart, basically knew how to compose symphonies.
Yeah, this is a fascinating part of what humanity is all about, I think, because, we really are, we're not just born out of the blue. We have all this, we sort of come preloaded, like buying a computer. You come with all the software installed. And, we have this ability for these talents and characteristics are sort of inbred in us. And this is sort of what the astrology chart will bring to light. And when you find that and you know what that is, what better way to know that than to use it? It's like I had this great gift I didn't even know about. And oftentimes people do know it, but they're just a little bit slightly off on their path and just need to get sort of prodded back on in a way that is enlightening and helpful in a way that doesn't, set them off their course.
Parents will typically want what's best for their children, which is the kind of the classic noble sentiment among parents, but not a rare one. But then you read the fine print, parents don't always know what's best for their children. They want what would have been best for themselves. And I'm not beating up anybody's parents with that. That's probably about as well as we can do. But what astrology does is it helps us see who this person, adult or child, actually is, independently of all these influences. You're mentioning a moment ago about how, you know, people often a little bit off course in their life. And many times that's because of the fact that we're social beings, that we have been socialized. Our parents encouraged us to a conventional career, but we're really supposed to be a jazz guitarist.
You know, for example. Right. It's remarkable stuff. I tell you, I've been an astrologer for 30 years, and I'm fascinated by the topic, always have been, never will be. And, yeah, I'm always a diehard skeptic, and I always will be. But I think that's okay to question.
Oh, absolutely. Keep the questions coming.
Yeah. My guest today has been Stephen Forrest. He's a remarkable astrologer. I encourage you to go to his website, encourage you to sign up for a list of a reading with him. His new book is called Yesterday's Sky. It's subtitled Reincarnation and Astrology. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate very much your time. I had a great conversation with you, and all the best to you.
Thank you. I have enjoyed it a lot, Chris. Thanks for having me.
That's great. Very good. Okay, folks, I'll talk to you all next week, and as always, be open to possibilities.
You've been listening to Turning of the Wheel with your host, Chris Fisher. To schedule a reading with me or to order artwork, you may visit my website at www.chrisflisher.com. That's www.chrisflisher.com. Or email me, and you can call me at 978-264-0668. Thank you, and as always, be open to possibilities.